Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What the bell happened last night, Wes? Wednesday podcast here on the Juice and the Cues podcast. Wes Chang and Matt D'Agostino with you guys, and we recap an 87-83 Syracuse road win against NC State. That hadn't happened in over a month, Wes, but a lot of things of notice in the game on Tuesday night, and whether they were good, bad, or indifferent, we come out with an 87-83 win, and Syracuse gets back in the win column on Tuesday.
Yeah, so Matt, we've had podcasts called the J.J. Starlin game, the Chris Bell game so far this season. Let's keep it going by calling the NC State win the Quadir Copeland game, because what a performance from Copeland, going for a career-high 25 points to go with 7 rebounds, 2 blocks. And what really impressed me is what he did down the stretch. And how about Adrian Autry trusting Copeland, putting the ball in his hands, and not Judah Mintz, not J.J. Starlin. Quadir Copeland took the biggest shot of the game with 20 seconds left, drawing a foul on DJ Burns, calmly hitting 2 free throws for the go-ahead bucket. And then he plays, I think, perfect defense on DJ Horn. Maybe NC State fans disagree with me and think that was a foul, but he forced a missed jumper with 5 seconds left that allowed Syracuse to escape. So very impressive performance from Copeland. He again shows why he's such a critical part of the success of this team.
Well, if we're not calling this the Chris Bell game, at least can we call it the Chris Bell half? 8 threes for Chris Bell in the first half, and Syracuse jumps out to a 15-point lead at halftime, scoring a season-high 55 points in any half. That's a season-high for any half for them. Came out shooting the ball great at 61% as a team, and they did the same thing they did against NC State in their home win. The difference was the Wolfpack mounted a pretty big charge in the second half, made things scary for the Orange down the stretch.
Yeah, you know, I was a little disappointed. What a clinic, first of all, right? Chris Bell, again, you mentioned it, 8 three-pointers. Just, you know, he did not miss in the first half, but a little disappointed in the second half. Now, I didn't expect Chris Bell to hit 8 more threes in the second half, but you knew Kevin Keats was going to make some halftime adjustments. They basically shadowed Bell in the second half. What disappoints me is that Autry didn't counter those adjustments with some of the chess moves of his own. I thought too often Bell just ran to the corner and waited for an open shot to come. So I felt like Autry really needed to ride that hot hand, run him off some flex screens, get him back involved in the offense, in my opinion. I just didn't see that second half adjustment coming from Autry.
So, and part of that is, I don't know whether that's necessarily a strong suit for Chris Bell. We know he can catch and shoot very well. But it's funny, I'm not the only one, as you're watching him in the first half on Tuesday, you're thinking Jerry McNamara 6 threes in the first half of the championship game. And then he goes to 8 by the end of the first half. But you look at McNamara. McNamara was built. Joe Girard was built for coming off of screens and getting off shots quickly. I wouldn't call Chris Bell's shot necessarily a quick release, nor do we see him often, you know, dribble into those threes. We'll see him now, and I think it's been more of an emphasis now that Raheem McLeod is out and Chris Bell needs to do a little bit more than just be the stationary spot-up shooter. I think we're seeing him putting the ball on the deck and getting to the rack a little bit more. But I don't see many more than the either catch-and-shoot threes or the pump fake, one dribble, then a three comes up from him. So I don't know that that's necessarily a strong suit for him. The evidence or lack thereof that there was much of that going on leads me to believe that that may not be playing to his strengths as much, which would certainly be the next evolution for him in his development.
Yeah, I was just about to say that, Matt, which is that's something that if he doesn't have, he needs to work on, because once he's able to come off the screen, I think that's going to open up a whole new level of his game. And, you know, one other thing I wanted to point out is he was engaged early. You know, he hits those, I think it was like 4 or 5 threes like right away. And then you can see he was involved more in the defense, and he grabbed 3 rebounds, which is still more than usual, but still not enough for a guy who basically, you know, he played all 40 minutes. So to only grab 3 rebounds is not great, but they all came in that moment where he's really engaged. And I would like to have seen that. And it kind of holds true. You know, he doesn't have that great offense, and then he doesn't really rebound or play much defense in the second half. So I would like to see the two things in his evolution is one, come off screens, catch and shoot, and two, just be more plugged in, more involved in the game and all other facets for 40 minutes.
I was logging this as the game went along. He had 3 threes in the first 3 minutes and 8 seconds, first 9 points for Syracuse, 12 of the first 14, 15 of the first 17, and he had 6 threes in just over 12 minutes, 7 in 16 minutes, and 8 in the first 17 minutes of the ball game. Just mind-boggling to see that happening. And he didn't look all that phased. Like, it didn't seem to him like he was necessarily impressing himself or overly impressing himself. He stayed within himself. I think that was part of the success, was he wasn't, you know, heat checking. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't running down the court like that. It was all just part of the game for him, which was great. But you mentioned him and Copeland, and I thought there was a great sequence for Copeland late in that game, or in the second half of the game, where he was kind of a steadying force when NC State was pulling close and eventually took a small lead. But he had a one-handed rebound kind of underneath their basket where he puts it back, never even like collected it with both hands, but just went up with one hand, caught the ball off the miss, and went back up with it. I thought was a pretty smooth move. He had a block on the other end shortly thereafter, and then he gets a nice reverse lay-in to kind of kill some momentum for NC State. So I thought he was a very key guy. I wanted to pose this question to you, Wes. We'll put Mintz, Starling, Malik Brown, Quadir Copeland, Chris Bell, 5 guys. Where would you rank Chris Bell and Quadir Copeland at this point in the season in terms of Syracuse's most important players? Maybe not the best player, but most important for their success.
I would rank... Oh, that's a really good question. So I would rank Judah Mintz number one. I would rank J.J. Starling number two, because you can see what happens when he starts hitting his threes. Quadir Copeland, I would rank third because of the spark he provides off the bench and also just the defensive energy. Now, I know that we can probably interchange the two between him and Bell, but I think his defense, he gives you so much more. I'd actually put Malik Brown fourth because he's their only big man.
Yeah,
if he doesn't play well, he fouls out. There's no one to guard the big man.
Certainly,
and then I guess I would put Chris Bell fifth. And that's not an indictment of Chris Bell, because when he shoots, you can see what he did last night. But I just think among those 5 players, he ranks fifth for that reason. I assume there's some Matt D'Agostino rankings coming up.
I didn't dive that much deeper into it, but as the game was going along, I'm almost thinking you could argue Chris Bell is maybe their third most important player in all of this, just because you see what happens when he's made. I mean, last night was absurd. Like, 8 threes and a half isn't going to happen very often, but I don't think it's a stretched, like, they're up 15 at halftime pretty much solely because of Chris Bell. And the consistency that he's now bringing to the table every game, he's knocking down 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 threes pretty consistently, to where I think you can rely on him for certain things. You can rely on Judah for a lot. You can rely on Starling to get you points. And again, this is no knock on Copeland or Brown, but I think we're starting to rely on Chris Bell pretty consistently now to get you into that 12 to 16 points a night. And it's been a great development throughout the season for him to see him turn into a reliable shooter for them.
Yeah, and I think with Chris Bell, there's a couple stats I want to point out to you. One, he's shooting over 41% from three-point land, so it talks about his importance. The second part is, if he hits 3 or more threes in a game, they've only lost 1 game this season. That was the Clemson game, where he hit 4 three-pointers and they still lost. That was literally the only game this season where he shot well from downtown and Syracuse has lost. And Matt, I wanted to at least talk a little bit about the resume. Now, you know, whether Syracuse makes the NCAA tournament or not, I don't know, but I at least wanted to talk about the implications of the game, because for at least Tuesday night, that went down as a quad one win because NC State ranked 75th in net. Again, quad one win assigned to a road win over a top 75 team. That said, you know NC State's going to drop out of the top 75 with that loss of the Orange. But along with Pitt and Oregon, this is a team you have to root for the rest of the way, and it's not going to be easy for the Wolfpack. They play Boston College and Florida State, certainly winnable games, but their last three games at North Carolina, hosting Duke, then at Pitt, brutal final stretch for them. But you have to hope that they can knock off maybe a UNC or Duke to keep that Syracuse win in the first quadrant.
You know what jumped out at me last night during the game was they showed the projected ACC tournament seeds. Pittsburgh, the 4 seed, getting a first round, getting a bye, was very surprising to see. Syracuse obviously has beaten them twice. It was the last road win for Syracuse was at Pitt on January 16th before Tuesday night. Syracuse now 2-0 against Pitt and NC State, 6-8 against teams above them in the KenPom rankings as of this current broadcast. But we'll see. The quad one wins. It bugs me. It still bugs me, Wesley, that it could be a quad one win one day, and the next day, it's just like that. It's gone. So, yeah, you do root for the teams that Syracuse is beating to do well the rest of the season to boost their own resume along the way. So, a good win, a gutsy win, a very impressive first half for Mr. Chris Bell as Syracuse takes down NC State. Next segment, Wes, we're going to talk to a former Orange quarterback, Zach Mahoney, joining us here on the Juice on the Q's podcast.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Back on the Juice on the Q's podcast, Wes Chang alongside Matt D'Agostino. We are thrilled to be joined by our great friend and former Syracuse quarterback, Zach Mahoney. Zach, appreciate the time. How are you today?
I'm good. I appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, Zach, wanted to get you started on this one. I think anyone who followed your college career couldn't help but root for you coming from a JUCO, being a Syracuse walk-on, then earning a scholarship, eventually starting 9 games. But before we get to that, just catch us up on what you've been up to since your SU career.
Yeah, I moved back to Chicago, got into real estate. I've been working with the same company now for a little bit over the last 4 years, kind of selling apartment buildings throughout the Midwest. So it's been keeping me busy. I've been enjoying it. Definitely miss football a little bit, but no, I like the new path that I'm on.
Zach, is there any way you can get the real estate market back and booming a little bit? My wife is a broker and things are a little slow. She's running out of things to do currently with the way the market is.
Yeah, I hear her on that one. It's it's definitely been slow. I'm hoping we're going to pick it up here shortly. I got a couple trips planned over the next couple weeks, which should hopefully help some things. So, no, I wish her the best of luck too. It's difficult time right now.
Maybe we'll offline for some tips where the market may be going here as we look ahead. But take us back to your career. What stands out to you as favorite memories, proudest accomplishments, all that good stuff from your time at Syracuse?
Yeah, my favorite memory would be the Boston College game. It was the one game that I started where we won. Boston College was a top 3 defense in the country, and we ended up scoring more points than a lot of other great teams in the country on them. But just to be able to lead a team to victory and have it be the only one, it's a little bittersweet, but that was by far my favorite memory. But no, Syracuse is a very special place. I hold it very near and dear to my heart. They were really the only school to give me an opportunity for me to showcase what I could do. And I'm more than grateful for not only the coaches and the staff on the football side, but everyone on the academic side as well. I finished up my master's program last year, 6 years or so removed from the program. And there were no issues at all about getting back involved, football bringing me in on the academic side. So I'm very thankful and, you know, will always be a part of Q's Nation.
Zach, you know, I thought it was a little unfair during your football playing days that anytime you started, it almost seemed like there was a top 25 team lined up in front of you. You know, I remember the game against number 8 LSU, obviously number 1 Clemson, number 17 Florida State. It always just seemed like you, when you started, you always played against the top team. Did you notice that, and did that affect the way you game planned in any way?
Never affected the game plan. The first start against LSU is obviously pretty special. There's a lot of hype around it. But having that be your first start kind of cools everything else down. So, you know, next week playing Clemson and then, you know, some other top ranked teams throughout after, I think starting off with an LSU team that was in the, you know, conversation of the best team in the country, potential national championship on the rise for them, and just being able to play against them was fun, and it definitely slowed the game down a little bit for the rest of the games to come.
You mentioned your appreciation for the coaching staff that was there when you were there. What are your thoughts on the coaching staff that they've assembled now? Fran Brown, winning top recruiter in the country, the influx of recruits coming to Syracuse, and just kind of the buzz around the program in general.
I'm extremely excited. Like I mentioned, I stay close contact with people on both the football and academic side, and the buzz that they're talking about right now is even a bigger buzz than when Dino first arrived. And there was, as a player, there was a pretty good buzz around him. So I think what we're seeing, what we're hearing, I'm extremely excited. I think Syracuse has a tremendous opportunity this year with the schedule that they have. You know, you take a look, top. If you can win 10 games, that puts you in the top 12, and that puts you in the playoff this year. So, you know, crazier things have happened.
Yeah, well, I'm curious, the 5+7 playoff format, what are your thoughts on it, as it looks like it'll be here now?
Yeah, I don't necessarily like the 12 teams. I wish they went to 8, but I understand, you know, obviously more football is better. Now the players are getting paid, I think that's a little bit of distraction, but that was clearly one of the big parts for players. If they're going to be playing an NFL schedule, they should be getting compensated in some sort. And now that they are, and there's a lot of guys out there that are making good money, you know, why not play more games? It seems, you know, I'll be watching all of them, that's for sure. But yeah, I'm very excited to see how this season plays out.
Zach, you know, when Fran Brown took over the program, he said to all alumni, and that obviously includes you, that he wanted to invite all of you back to practice. There's going to be 4 spring practices that are specifically devoted to guys like you, football alum who contributed to the program. Do you plan on taking him up on that offer?
I'd love to. I got to take a look at the schedule and see how things are playing out. But, you know, coming back to campus and being around the facility is always something I enjoy doing. You know, I was back last summer for a wedding and I still stop to see people. It's something I always want to do. If I have the time and I have the opportunity, I absolutely will.
Wes says he's been stretching since Fran Brown said that, just waiting to see if he can get in on a practice or two, take some reps. So I don't know what kind of competition you think you may have at the quarterback spot, but Wes says he's ready if you need a fill-in practice, 7-on-7 or anything like that. So that's good to go there. Zach, it's awesome catching up with you. Glad to hear things are going well and you're staying a part of the program. Appreciate your time this morning and good luck in the future. Get that real estate market back where it needs to be. It would really help the D'Agostino household out a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Appreciate you guys having me on and look forward to continue listening.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Back on the Juice on the Cuse podcast, Wes Chang alongside Matt D'Agostino. Matt, I want to end the show staying with Syracuse football. Let's talk a little recruiting because Syracuse landed yet another member of the 2024 class on Monday. 2024 lineman Xavier Miles announcing that he committed to Syracuse. He's a three-star athlete, plays both sides of the line. Pick the orange over offers from West Virginia, Michigan State, Maryland, and Rutgers, among others. And he comes from St. Peter's Prep. And for those of you who went to Catholic school growing up, you know they have a very strict dress code. But Xavier telling the Juice Online that he's risking detention because he's going to school all decked out in the Syracuse orange and blue. First off, congratulations to Xavier and committing to the orange. And second, I hope the school administrators go a little easy on him and look the other way for that detention slip.
There may be an exception to the rule, Wes. He's another guy, obviously, who mentioned Fran Brown, maybe the biggest reason why he chose to go to Syracuse. So another good sign for the Orange football program. I want to take it back to basketball real quick. Wes, we were talking earlier in the show about Syracuse's most important players, kind of where they rank in terms of importance to the team's success. I was watching the game last night against NC State, and I've watched several games, you know, and thought the same thing throughout the season, where you look at guys and you say, who looks most like an NBA talent? And I don't know that maybe necessarily any of these guys on this team have a sustainable NBA career in them. That remains to be seen. You know, we see Judah Mintz talked about in a lot of second round mock drafts. But to me, the guy who looks most like an NBA player, J.J. Starling. I don't know if you agree with that or not, but he, to me, reminds me of, and I'm not putting him in this category, but reminds me of Dwayne Wade, kind of maybe a little bit undersized two guard, but has that scoring mentality. Or I'll even go with this. Looks like a Deion Waiters, somebody who just is like that spark plug on offense who you know will go get you buckets and can be relied on for that. He can do it at all three levels. He's got a really good pull-up mid-range game, which I think will help him in the professional ranks as well. And I even went back to see if anybody had ever talked about him. There was an article before the season started where he was on the list of surprise potential first-round picks in college basketball this season. Again, I don't know if we get to that point. I haven't seen anything that suggests it, but I think he's proven to be a proven commodity, a solid, very capable scorer. And when I watch NBA games for a living for TNT, the movements out on the court, the attitude, the ability to get where he wants to go, I think makes him a little bit ahead of maybe even a Judah Mintz in terms of NBA potential should he get there at some point after college.
I think I would make the argument that Chris Bell has the most NBA potential because, you know, in this 3-and-D era, especially a guy like Buddy Boeheim actually played a couple games, had a cup of coffee with the Detroit Pistons, and it wasn't because of his defensive ability. It was because of his ability to catch and shoot. And we talked about this earlier. Bell really needs to develop other areas of the game, especially his offense and the ability to come off a curl, catch and shoot. But with that kind of range and that kind of consistency, again, shooting over 40% from the college line in just his sophomore season, I feel like he could develop into that kind of NBA 3-and-D guy that they look for. I don't know if any of these guys have sustainable NBA careers ahead of them, just like you said, but if I were to pick one among the group, if Chris Bell can continue this kind of shooting, he bumps it up to like 45% in his junior season, which is not out of the realm of possibilities. I could see him at least sneaking on an NBA board at some point.
You see, Chris, when Coach Autry's telling you he needs some defense and he needs these things, he's trying to prepare you for the next level. So Coach Autry certainly trying to do well by his guys in this 2023-2024 season. Wes, another very solid job by you. I have no complaints of your performance here on a Wednesday. That'll do it for us on the Juice on the Cuse podcast for Wednesday, February 21st. Wes and Matt, we'll talk to you again soon. Appreciate you tuning in.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.